Thanks for joining us on a rare Thursday afternoon edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are talking the Nets opening preseason game and 107-102 loss to the hated New York Knicks. Next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shull. My co-host, Josh Bass, is currently in Los Angeles, hanging out with my college friends. Not his college friends. We didn't go to college together. My college friends. And I hope he's enjoying himself. Anyways, let's get into it. New York Knicks, Brooklyn Nets. The Knicks win 107-102. Of course, final score largely irrelevant in a preseason game. How did the Nets look? Okay, they were decent. There were definitely some flashbulb moments. They were pretty good overall in the first half. For most of the first quarter, they were stifling defensively. I think the Knicks only had about 11 points with a few minutes left in the first. The Nets started a group of Allen Crabbe, Caris LeVert, D'Angelo Russell, Damari Carroll, and Jarrett Allen. And that was interesting to me, and that's kind of where I want to get started. And that was obviously about what we expected, except for the fact that Caris LeVert is in there, and now that was, I think, most likely just because Rondae Hollis-Jefferson missed the game because of an injury. But we've heard all this talk in preseason camp about the Nets going with a four-guard lineup this year, and I guess this would be the kind of light version of it instead of Spencer Dinwiddie or someone like Shabazz Napier. And the thing is, like, the Nets have big enough guards that they can hold up defensively in those lineups. LeVert, 6'7", strong, athletic. He can guard, I'd say, up to a three, maybe some fours in the league. Damari Carroll, he's perfectly capable of guarding fours. Kenny Atkinson has emphasized that Carroll is willingly embraced playing a lot of that position this year, which I think is where he will be at his best, given the fact that he is not necessarily a speedster. And then you have D'Angelo Russell and Allen Crabbe at 6'5" and 6'6", 6'7", respectively. I think those guys can guard bigger players. So you have the versatility where you can even plug in someone like Napier just as an extra shooter, extra creator, and really hold up on both ends of the floor relative to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who, again, just he does so many things well, but without that three-point shot, presuming he didn't develop one this offseason, I think that's just such a liability if you're going to play him next to Carroll, who's not necessarily, even though Carroll's a good shooter, obviously, he's not really explosive enough to offset that. So I think if you're looking for the highest upside offensive lineup, and I think a switch that, again, this all shifts if Hollis-Jefferson kind of goes back to defending the way he was when he was younger, but I think taking him off the floor and replacing him with either Napier or Dinwiddie is certainly a downgrade defensively, but I don't think it makes or breaks you on that end. Well, offensively, I think they could be a lot better with one of those guys in. So I'm interested, with everyone healthy, like what starting lineup Atkinson puts out there, and I'm sure we're going to see him experiment a lot more with this in the preseason. All right, let's start off talking about Caris LeVert. Obviously, he was kind of the biggest story coming out of training camp. People are really excited about how explosive he's looked, and the descriptions have varied. We've talked about them quite a bit on this podcast, but the sum of it is he's been utterly explosive on the offensive end, and you got to see a little bit of that in this game. There were certainly flashes of stuff he didn't necessarily have in his arsenal last year. Even the first play of the game, going off the dribble, and I think he blew by Kevin Knox. You could just see, if anything, and this is already a real talent of his, but if anything, he's even faster this season, and his ability to get up in the air quickly and really just explode off the ground. Sorry, I can't think of a better word for that. But it was really, really impressive, and I think you can tell that he is, if anything, a better athlete than he was last season, which I think should be a scary proposition for other teams throughout the league. He didn't shoot the ball that well tonight, just 1-5 from 3, but the 1-3 hit was nice, and I kind of like that he was seeking them out off the dribble, which is something that I can't remember who mentioned it. It might have been Ed Davis, it might have been Jared Dudley, but obviously that wasn't something that he was confident enough to do last year, because frankly, you have to be such a great shooter to be able to shoot NBA threes off the dribble in this league, and obviously it's a skill we're seeing becoming more and more prevalent across the NBA as more guys come in the Steph Curry model, and guys continue to get better in their skill development. But it's a really, really hard thing to do, to just speed away from some of the best athletes in the world and then just like fling a shot up from 22 feet and hit it with some degree of accuracy. But it seems like LeVert is increasingly getting better at that. He had one shot, maybe the most exciting play of the game for me on his part, where he just went right off the dribble, stopped on a dime around the elbow, and just confidently nailed the pull-up. And again, that was another thing that wasn't part of his game last year. And if he can get to a point where he can make that shot with some consistency, that's when you start talking about a, not a superstar, but a star-level offensive player, like a guy who can both really torture you just with his raw speed, and you have to take into account the fact that he could stop on a dime and hit that shot with some kind of consistency. That is a really scary proposition, and that's normally a quality that you look for in a guard, but when you get into guys the size of LeVert, you start talking about players like Paul George, Jimmy Butler, and he kind of takes a step up more towards that direction, so that was really exciting for me. All right, we're going to keep this one relatively short since I'm going solo, and again, it's just the first preseason game, so we'll take our first break now and come back and talk about D'Angelo Russell and how the rest of the Nets starters looked.
Locked On NFL is becoming everyone's favorite daily national NFL podcast. Mondays, it's the local experts on the biggest stories of the week. Tuesdays, former NFL QB Sage Rosenfels joins Matt Williamson. Wednesday, it is Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus. Thursdays, it is the great Mike Sando of ESPN. And Friday, get Matt's picks only on Locked On NFL.
All right, let's get into it. D'Angelo Russell, he did not shoot the ball well. 4 of 12. 1 of 4 from 3-point range, but I really actually loved how he played in this game. 11 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. But obviously, it was more about the eye test with him. And you notice right off the bat, he was really putting in a ton of effort on the defensive end. And last year, there were just so many points where he either looked totally lost or looked like he didn't care. And it was especially early in the season when he was just carrying such a big load on offense. It was almost like, I don't know if it could have been a fatigue thing or it could have been a little bit of a sense of entitlement. And maybe that's me reading too much into it. But he just, again, did not put in the same defensive effort as his teammates. And that totally flipped in this game tonight. He was sprinting around. He was extremely conscientious about helping. He seemed to take pride in stopping his man. And look, obviously all this stuff is a little easier when you have months and months off of basketball as everyone comes out with a little bit of an extra pep in their step. You're as healthy as you're going to be at basically any point in the year. It's just a completely different animal when you're coming off a back-to-back and you have to bring that same energy, so I don't want to read too much into it, but that was really exciting. And then just his ability to manipulate a defense, obviously that's something we saw a lot of last year, just the kind of intuitive start and stop skill set, and he really figures out a way to get around guys and beat guys off the dribble despite not being the quickest or most athletic player in the world. But I like the fact that instead of doing that to hunt for his own shot or to kind of generate a tough floater early in a shot clock, he was using it as a way to set up teammates. He was able to break down the first guy, draw a double team, and use his vision to just make a functional, smart, good pass. And we know he has a propensity for brilliance passing the basketball, and he has an equal propensity for turning it over, attempting those passes. So I like that he kind of leveraged his skill set in just a very functional way. He didn't try to do too much with it, and I think that really did him a lot of good. Alan Crabb, I'm not going to spend too much time on. He hit 2 threes, 3 of 7 from the floor. He was maybe a little disappointing, but again, it's just one game. He looked almost exactly the same as he did last year. I'm excited to see if he's made any improvements going forward over a much larger sample size. Damari Carroll 0 for 5. Again, not too much to worry about. The one thing I'll say about him is I'm wondering how sustainable his shooting from last year was. Obviously, it was over a large sample size, and he's had years in the past where he was actually quite a bit better shooting the three ball than he was last season, so I guess that should be encouraging, but I've just never really seen him as a great shooter, so I'm wondering what kind of season he's going to have from three, because to me, that really totally defines his value and whether he is worth keeping past the deadline for this Nets team. Jared Allen was a little bit disappointing. Had a couple nice moments early in the game, a monster block to open things up. And again, he just looks like he's in better physical shape than last year, certainly better than the start of last year, and perhaps even more explosive in a summer in the weight room, particularly going into your second year in the NBA. I think we'll really do that for you. But he just got flat out bullied by Enes Kanter, who finished with 22 points, 20 rebounds in 27 minutes. And now Kanter did a lot of the same stuff to Ed Davis, and he really is exceptional around the basket. So it's not totally on Allen, but it was a little bit disappointing given the expectations around him. Allen finished a team low minus 20 for the game. All right, let's maybe take a minute or two and start going over the Nets bench. I'll say the fourth quarter stuff for our final segment. Ed Davis, again, he looked solid. He got bodied by Cantor a few times, did have 3 points, 7 rebounds. He was good enough. Joe Harris, pretty awful game shooting the ball. He got a lot of good looks, but just finished 3 of 10 from the floor, 2 of 8 from three-point range. I don't love the beard and shaggy hair look. It looks like he just was kind of stranded on an island in the middle of the ocean at the end of last season, and Atkinson and Sean Marks like just swung around on a yacht and picked him up on the way back to Brooklyn just to get there in time for this game. But yeah, so I don't know, maybe he'll shave it after the poor shooting performance. But again, I have all the confidence in the world he will get it together, and he still managed to manufacture 10 points despite that poor shooting, so give him a little bit of credit for that. Spencer Dinwiddie, he was pretty good. I liked how aggressive he was attacking the basket. Frank Ntilikina just absolutely destroyed him on one of his drives, like really got him solidly on a nice block at the rim. Still, in 19 minutes, 13 points, 6 assists. Can't question the stat line. I think Dinwiddie showed some of the juice off the dribble that he lost as last season went on, and I think really defined his early success and really set him up for success shooting the three ball extremely well last year, just because he had that threat to get to the basket at any point. And then as the year went on and he was clearly kind of worn down, I think that went away a little bit and he didn't shoot it quite as well. Took one of those classic tough pull-ups that are part of his game. I'd kind of prefer if he scraps those shots until he gets a little better at them, and maybe he has over the offseason. He only took one, so we don't really know yet, but all in all, have to be really happy with how he looked. All right, we will come back, finish up talking about the Nets bench, maybe get in a little bit on the end of the game, and maybe talk about some of the Knicks guys that look good, because I was impressed with a few of them, and I can't really contain my excitement. All right, we'll be back next on Locked On Nets.
Locked On NBA never went away, and it's still here for you every day. Locked On NBA is your daily national NBA podcast. Every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories and then stay with Locked On NBA all week long with daily 30-minute episodes on everything going on in the league. Follow for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA.
All right, some deep bench guys. How about Rodion's Kurucs? And this is a little podcasting magic for you guys. I'm going to be putting out the second half of my crossover episode with Locked On Knicks' James Marcita tomorrow, I think, so Friday morning for you guys, and you'll probably have both of these to listen to, assuming you miss this one in the afternoon / tonight. And I just butcher poor Rodion's last name. I think I was saying Kurucs all offseason, and that's my fault. That's pure laziness. I did not put in the time to learn his last name. It is, in fact, pronounced Kurucs, so my apologies to him. And he absolutely deserves them because he was really, really good in this game after basically getting buried on the bench of Barcelona's B team last year. He comes on in 12 minutes, gets 13 points, 4 rebounds, 4 steals. And interestingly, I was more impressed with his defense than his offense, though his offense was very solid. Defensively, he just showed off a lot of length and side-to-side quickness that I didn't necessarily expect out of him. And I really thought he'd kind of just be in for a little bit of a shock going against NBA talent for the first time. And I just thought Musa had a little bit more experience going against those types of guys than he did. But he was really, really good and showed that, again, like he played for arguably like the best team in the world or one of the best teams in the world outside of the United States. Because he came in and he was ready to compete from the get-go. And his length really resulted in him making some productive plays on the defensive end. Offensively, I thought he was maybe more opportunistic than anything else. Got a lot of layups and got to the foul line, just kind of pulling his way to the rim, getting little dump-offs from teammates, catching his own misses, and putting them back in. So I think the 13 points in 12 minutes, if you didn't watch the game, is a little misleading. But he give him credit. He took advantage of the opportunities he had, and he did get me excited about going forward, because he is just such a big human being, and you can tell there's some skill set behind that. So I think the combination of his size, skill, and defensive aptitude could maybe earn him a role on this team if there's an injury, and I really didn't expect him to play this year, because I thought, if anything, Musa would be the guy if there were some issues on the injury front. I am really excited to see Musa whenever we get him potentially back for that October 18th game. Should be interesting. I'm intrigued to see him play, and I got kind of excited after watching Karuk's. Outside of that, not too much to note. Jared Dudley, I liked how he looked. I mean, again, he's really a known entity at this point. It never looks like he's in the best physical shape, but seems fine out there. Makes some really smart plays. He had a few nice passes. He's just really just one of those, like, again, like, excuse the cliche, but he is just the quintessential glue guy and just seems to make smart plays whenever he's out there on the court. And even if he's not scoring, even if he's not running around that much and isn't even that active, he'll get the ball in his hands and he'll just make these smart little extra selfless passes that there's not even necessarily any brilliance there, but they just help because there's so many times in the NBA where a guy will rather take like a selfish shot or go one-on-one then just making this like little extra like 3 foot pass to someone wide open behind the 3-point line behind them. And I saw Dudley make similar plays to that a few times in this game. So that was kind of fun. As far as Nuni Omot, the rookie out of Baylor, I didn't even know his full story, and Mike Breen regaled us with it on the next broadcast. It's pretty incredible. I highly encourage everyone to look into that a little bit more because it's just pretty cool. He really got through some infinitely long odds, like the point that like he was still playing on his JV team as a junior in high school to make it into the NBA. But he hit a three, had a few nice moments of activity. I think he's almost inevitably going to end up in Long Island, but maybe down the road he could be a backup stretch four for the Nets. I don't know. They certainly need someone there, and he was a great three-point shooter at the college level, so that's pretty interesting. All right, that's pretty much it for the Nets. Travion Graham, Theo Pinson, also playing some time. Graham, some nice activity. Looked terrible shooting the basketball, but again, pretty active, and he does have a track record of a good three-point shooter in the NBA, so you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. Pinson, I frankly didn't notice that much. He was just fine, though. On the Knicks side of things, I obviously love the game from Enes Kanter. I know no one cares about this, but for those of you still listening, I do appreciate it. Alonzo Trier, a guy I just loved in college. I was at Arizona State, so it was kind of a love-hate relationship. He went to the University of Arizona, but he was just so much fun to watch going to Pac-12 tournaments my last few years there. He just made so many big plays and just seemed to be unstoppable in big moments, and the Nets kind of got a taste of that tonight. 25 points in 26 minutes. I'm still kind of shocked he went undrafted. Obviously, it was kind of hinted at on the broadcast. Part of that had to do with him having the performance-enhancing drug issues in college, but I don't know. I think teams read too much into that stuff because he was just electric, and I think he's going to be an NBA player. Frank Ntilikina, a couple of moments of brilliance defensively, two awesome blocks, the aforementioned one on Dinwiddie. I can't remember who, but he got one on, I think it might have been Travion Graham as well. Ron Bakur came in off the bench, a couple of nice steals, he was good. Emmanuel Mudiay is just, like, trash. Like, I'm sorry, like, I liked him a lot out of the draft. I got to interview him before the draft. He seems like a really good guy, but he's a borderline NBA player, and I think he's like a total end of the bench guy if he is in the league. Mitchell Robinson, he is going to be very, very good. That's saying too much, but he's going to be an NBA player, and I think he's the upside to be very, very good. He's just like such an intuitive shot blocker and rim protector, and really aggressive. All right, that's all the good stuff I have to say about the Knicks, so I'll leave anything else for James Marceda and Locked On Knicks. I highly encourage you to check that out, but if you don't want to go all the way over to the podcast, you can just wait until tomorrow, because we are doing the second part of our crossover episode, and he is interviewing me about the Nets. It gets a little contentious. He kind of pushes back on some of the more positive Nets talk that we promote on this podcast, so it's a nice little debate. And then next week, I actually got to record an interview with Brian Lewis. It got of the New York Post. It got cut a little short, but he did have some really interesting stuff to say on both D'Angelo Russell and Caris LeVert, so I highly encourage you to stay tuned for that. Until then, be well and talk to you again tomorrow.